Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here.
Up in the air, AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green, and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Paul Daner Jr. here with Richard Skinner. It's a special day.
It's just a real special day.
It's a really special day.
Because we're doing this while we're finally done with about a 12-hour day.
Yeah, a 12-hour day. And really, folks, you should be happy for this edition of Scribe Session because you're getting a bit too delirious, maybe delirious, beat writers right now.
My fingers are tired. My eyes are tired. I can't ask another Andy Dalton question, nor do I really want to.
No, I'm happy we don't have to ask any more Andy Dalton questions.
That's a good point. It went quicker than what we kind of thought. We thought it was either going to be done before training camp began or right before the season began. They kind of split the difference on us a little bit.
That's fine, as long as it's over. Well, so I guess we should start off by saying, yes, it's Monday night, and our week got off to a great start when at about 9:30 on Monday morning, the news broke that the Andy Dalton contract extension had finally been done and that we would be having a really bad day.
Yeah. And the funny part was I was literally just getting ready to dial the agent Jeff Nally's phone number, even though he didn't take any of my calls last week, to ask that very question if he would have answered. And I went, okay, well, he's either going to talk to me real quickly right now or not at all, because it's a done deal, and it was. And at the end of the day, we finally got some details of that done deal that we'll get into.
We did. Let's go ahead and get into it, because it's why you come here. And frankly, I don't even really know where to go with that, because it's six.
Well, the raw numbers scare people. Let's just do the raw numbers first, because the raw numbers scared a lot of non-Andy Dalton fans.
Right, and probably would have scared a lot of Andy Dalton fans if you really think of it that way. I mean, when you think of an extension that's 6 years and $115 million as the number first comes out there, you get a little nervous. When you're talking about paying somebody $19 million a year in 6 years through 2020, and that's a long way to go for a guy who's 0-3 in the playoffs and look bad doing it. But the reality is, in the NFL, those numbers really aren't worth the contract that they're written on, and the real numbers of it are essentially it amounts to a 2-year contract for $25 million.
Yeah, he gets not a lot in base salary over the next couple seasons. In fact, this year it's still under $1 million base salary.
Yeah, he still has his current deals.
Correct. And then base. So starting next year it's about $3.5 million base salary. Now that being said, he's getting a lot of bonus money. He's going to get $12 million this year.
Yep.
Actually got $12 million today. I should say this year. Signing his name, as we sat down here waiting for the Andy Dalton press conference to begin, he was putting his name on a piece of paper that was going to give him $12 million right then and there. Signing bonus. He's going to get another $5 million because it's a Thursday. Throwback Thursday gets $5 million.
What a week.
And next March of 2015, he will get another $4 million bonus on top of that. So there is some good bonus money in there for him. But the point being, when you see that initial money, all you're trying to do is stretch contracts out to spread out salary cap dollars. Now, his contract base salary-wise escalates significantly in 2016. It goes up to $10 million, about a $7 million raise. But the good part is, if you're not satisfied with Andy Dalton starting then, you don't have to pay him. You can cut him. None of that money comes into play, which roughly amounts to, almost $90 million. None of that really comes into play. And if you do like him, you just keep on paying him each year you like him.
Yeah, and in reality, If the Bengals wanted to cut Andy Dalton, they would actually save money against the salary cap because there's no guarantees on the back end that would leave next to no dead money. They would basically save money every year after the 2015 season. So this 2 years, $25 million, you paid him. And at that point, you would be saving money against the cap if you let him go.
And
you talk about being able to get out of a contract.
Absolutely.
It's ideal for the team.
All right, so then you ask yourself, why would Andy Dalton sign such a deal? It's because he got $17 million. He'll have $17 million in the bank come Thursday.
Yeah.
$12 million today, $5 million then, and a chance to, again, make some money if he has success, which he believes he's going to have. The Bengals put some incentives in there if he does get him deep into the playoffs. I hate to use the term win-win because I want to slap myself whenever I hear somebody say win-win, but it really and truly is. The more the Bengals win, the better off Andy Dalton's going to be, and the better off the franchise and team and fans are going to like it.
No, you're absolutely right. And for Dalton, you know, he can make a lot of money here. and the thing that is different is the Bengals, because of their loyalty, I think make this a safer bet to make if you're Andy Dalton. Say, people will say, well, you're leaving a lot of money out there by taking what's kind of become known as the Kaepernick structure now of this, the money up front, and then teams can basically get out of it after that. Yeah, you are leaving some money out there, but because the Bengals are so loyal, you have a very good chance of picking possibly every dime of
Absolutely.
That $96 million in base salary because they like to keep their guys around and will, and particularly Mike loves his quarterbacks. I mean, this organization loves his quarterbacks. If you can go out and continue to do what you have done thus far, there's a pretty good chance you're going to stay here and keep collecting those big base salaries, guaranteed or not.
And not to be hokey, because Andy's actually brought it up before. I mean, he brought it up today. He likes Cincinnati. I think he likes playing for this team in this offense with these people in this offense. It's a case of, yeah, could you maybe have gone out after this year if you had a really good season and make more on the open market? Quite possibly. But you're also going into some unknown factors in some of those cases. You know, you may not know the offense as well. You may not know the players as well. It may be that it's a 5-11 team that's willing to give you more money than anybody, yet it's not a winning situation that long-term is really best for you. I think he sees, as you mentioned, he sees the chance to make all that money in that contract and be with a successful team.
Yeah, this does lend a lot of flexibility for the Bengals to take care of some of the other guys that need to take care of, namely Perfect and Green, and then there'll be other guys. Marvin Jones and Sanu will both come up. Choices will have to be made there. I mean, there's going to be a lot of guys that are, because it's such a young roster where a lot of the stars are young coming up in their first contracts, that you have to have some flexibility in that. And I think this does afford that. It just does.
And the other part to it is, I know fans who are upset with Andy Dalton's playoff performance. You have every right to be. I mean, it's not been good. The numbers don't lie in that regard. But the grass isn't always greener in that regard either. It doesn't mean automatically you're going to draft a qualified NFL starting quarterback. It doesn't mean on the open market you'd have gone out and gotten anybody that's any better than Andy Dalton. It's one thing to say you don't like him. Okay, I may not be able to convince you. You may not be able to convince them with what we've written, what we've said, what the numbers suggest actually in the regular season, how good he's been. I may not be able to convince you of that, but ask yourself this question. Who better is out there that you can get? It doesn't automatically mean you're going to have success. You might be able to draft Joe Schmo quarterback pretty well in the draft at some point. He may be the hot guy. Doesn't mean he's going to succeed in this league.
No.
Doesn't automatically mean that whatsoever. I think fans have gotten a little, I don't want to say jaded, but it maybe they don't see it quite the big picture because they see Dalton coming in as a rookie, having success. You saw Russell Wilson come in, have success. You saw Kaepernick very quickly, wasn't his rookie year, but late in the next year, have very quick success. Ben Roethlisberger had pretty quick success. That can happen. It's happened in this league. But for every one of those guys, I'm going to give you an E.J. Manuel. I mean, who's well, was okay, but he wasn't great, and then he got
hurt.
And
you lose years. When you don't have a quarterback, you
with
lose
a ready-made roster to win. That's
right.
The other part. You have the other parts basically to win.
You lose decades. Look at the Bengals of the 90s. Look at the Browns. I mean, it's the joke that goes around forever is that jersey with all the quarterbacks' names on the back, because that's just it. If you don't have one, it is more costly than having an average one. And there are, I would equate probably about 16 teams out there that have a quarterback worse than Andy Dalton, and they have a problem.
Well, and we're not going to hear from this guy in the podcast, but we're going to hear from a lot of different voices here in just a little bit. But I got a chance to talk to Jason Campbell, who's the backup. And Jason's been in a lot of places, the starter in Washington, the starter in Oakland, started a game in Chicago, started some last year in Cleveland. And he you could tell he was a little envious of it, not in a bad way, but in a way in which he even said, you know, this is the way you do it in a franchise. You have a, what you deem as a franchise quarterback, and then you draft around him to make him better. He said, the places I were, he said, we bring in free agents and veteran guys, and he said, then you bring in a lot of contracts with a lot of egos, with a lot of money, and he said, you never got to grow together as a group. He said, they've done it where they're trying to grow this group together to where it's not just a year or two. It's, you know, he said 7 or 8 years, which is an awful long NFL window, but that's what he said. He said, where it's 7 or 8 years where you have a legitimate chance to play in the Super Bowl, and I thought it was well said on his part.
Yeah, and for all the knock about the playoff performances and all that, like we said, it's fair. There is a lot to be said for getting there. I mean, I just feel like this fan base has discarded how hard it is to make the playoffs in the NFL. I mean, there it just doesn't happen like that. This is the first time the Bengals have ever gone to the playoffs for 3 years in a row.
Ever.
And it's with Andy Dalton, the quarterback. And it's whenever they do something good or you name a good stat like that, everyone says, well, it's because they had a great defense. And then every time they lose in the playoffs, it's because Andy Dalton stunk.
Right.
The defense also gave up 27 points to the San Diego Chargers, regardless of turnovers. I mean, there were still fumbles. Listen, that's all fine and good. The bottom line is making the playoffs is hard, and there's something to be said for a guy that can consistently get you. Because I'm eventually, odds are you stumble into a win there, right? At some point, yeah, don't you think?
And I think
you got to get there though.
And this could be lip service, but you've talked to players over the last couple of years of that, Paul, and I've talked to some today about it as well. They all seem to take a shared responsibility. You can sometimes tell when people want to just say, it wasn't me. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but it wasn't me. They all seem to be very willing to say, hey, it's all of us. We're all in this together. We're all the ones that cost ourselves. Now, at the end of the day, some of that's taking Andy Dalton's back, and that I think says a lot about what they think about Andy too. But I think it is a shared responsibility.
Yeah. Another aspect of this deal that I want to get into that I actually think is a fairly genius thing to come up with as far as the Bengals and Dalton are concerned is, okay, you want to make the type of money that a guy that wins games in the playoffs makes. If that's our sticking point here, which obviously it was, I don't think anybody would deny that that was where the Bengals were coming from, is saying we're not going to pay huge money to a guy who hasn't won in the playoffs, and Dalton saying, but I've done all these other things, so they come up with this. The escalators are, it could be massive and really rarely ever done in contracts. Really, Kaepernick is the only one that has anything that's similar to this. If the Bengals were to go to the Super Bowl this year with Andy Dalton taking 80% of the snaps, he would have $18 million added to his contract. Now, how that works is any time during the life of this contract, if he takes the Bengals to the Super Bowl, every year after that, $1.5 million will be added to the base salary for every year, regardless. Just got to do it once. Take 80% of the snaps, lead the team to the Super Bowl, and boom, you get $1.5 million the rest of the year. And then it's, if they just make the divisional round, it's $1 million every year. So win a game. Doesn't even have to win in the playoffs. If this team got a bye to the divisional round, boom, $1 million every year on the remaining contract. If you make the AFC Championship game, boom, flow in another $500,000. And then we said the Super Bowl number. That is a lot of bonus money. And you need an incentive to play well? I mean, and to play well now, there it is.
And it pays
a guy for delivering and for overcoming the one thing that is the knock on him. And I like that. I like the thing. It's okay. Well, if you do that, we'll pay you like somebody who does that. It would, I mean, you'd be talking about lifting the average salary to $19 million instead of from the 16 that it currently is.
Yeah, and again, it's team-based. I like that fact. It's not based on if you throw for 4,000 yards and you throw 32 touchdowns and you throw only 15 interceptions. All you have a quarterback rating of XYZ. I think Kyle Rudolph's contract is based it's based somewhat the escalator on number of catches.
Catches and Pro Bowl appearances.
I'm just not a big fan of that
yeah.
because, and I don't think Kyle Rudolph's this guy, but there are guys like this in the league. That you're at 72 catches with 2 weeks to go. What do you think you're going to tell your quarterback in the huddle? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Give me the ball. Throw me the ball. And it's a lot of me league in a lot of cases. This is based on team success, and I think that's a big thing as well.
Yeah, it is. And so there's a lot of dynamics. But what I do want to do is I want to bring in from the press conference that happened Monday afternoon. A few of the most interesting things that I think was said. I'm gonna bring you some comments from Dalton, from Mike Brown, and also from Marvin Lewis, talking about this contract, what it means, and just some of the ins and outs of it. But anyway, so this is Andy Dalton, Mike Brown, and Marvin Lewis from Monday's press conference. Some of their most interesting comments.
Thank you for coming down today. This is a happy news day for the Bengals. We've reached an extension with Andy for 6 more years, which will take him through the year 2020. And this is important to solidify our franchise going forward. Andy has earned his place here. He has gained the confidence of the players, the coaches, and the management of the team. We're betting big on him because we believe in him. We're looking forward to the future with Andy, and I'll let Marvin have his say, and then Andy. And I want to add one other thing. Katie is the one who negotiated this deal, and she worked hard at it. She has been in talks with Andy's representative for months, and there have been so many back and forths and ups and downs. And I'm proud of the way she brought it to a conclusion.
Andy, I mean, I guess, how big of a relief is this for you? I mean, you can always say to us, so I'm not worried about it, but like Coach was saying, it has to be on your mind a little bit. How big of a relief is this?
Yeah, I mean, it's something, obviously going into this, it wasn't like my main focus. Obviously, when he comes back to training camp, I mean, there's a lot of other things that I'm worried about. But, yeah, I mean, you do have it in the back of your mind. When is it going to get done? You know, where are we at certain points? And so now we don't have to worry about it. We just get, like Marvin said, we just get to play the game and, you know, don't have this, you know, hanging over me. And so it is a relief. And like I said, there's a lot of hard work that went into it. So, you know, I'm glad we're to this point, and I'm glad I'm sitting in front of y'all right now.
Did you ever get to the point where you thought about, well, maybe I'll just play this thing out, or was it always the thought that this is going
to
get done?
You know, I always thought it was going to get done. I think, you know, both sides wanted to get it done, and so I figured it would get done. And, you know, it obviously didn't.
More than any other position in the NFL, quarterback is something about intangibles. Where do intangibles rank with you specifically? The leadership question, the big game capability, that sort of thing. How much do they figure into what you do?
I mean, obviously, it's a big part of it. I mean, obviously, the quarterback position's, you know, he's the leader of the team. He's the guy that has the ball in his hands at all time, and so. You know, physically is one thing, mentally is another thing, the intangibles, the leadership, how you get other guys to respond to you, it's all part of it. And so, you know, my goal and my job here is to get the 10 other guys on the offense to play better around me and to play to their best potential. And not only offensively, but defensively. The defensive guys feed off what we do as well. So, you know, I think that's a big part of you know, the position of playing quarterback.
Whitworth said in the locker room earlier that you couldn't necessarily be a good leader because you hadn't experienced enough to be able to lead. Fourth year, how has that changed? How have you evolved? How have you been able possibly to become more of that guy simply because you've gone through some of the things that you talked about?
Yeah, I mean, when you come in as a rookie, it's easy to say, yes, I'm the quarterback now, I'm coming, I'm the leader of this team. And you're, you know, sitting in the huddle with guys that are 34 years old and, you know, you're you know, at that point I was 23. So I mean, it's a different, you know, it's different now, obviously, because I have played. I've played at a high level, and guys know that the experience that I have and the experience that comes along with being in the same system for a certain amount of time, same organization for a certain amount of time. I mean, you just get you get the credibility, and so. Kind of like what Marvin was saying earlier, I felt like I've, there's been a progression to where I am as a leader on this team, and now I feel like I am the leader of the team.
Marvin, how important is it to you to have that position secured and to keep the core kind of together and growing together?
You know, I don't know if it's been dumb luck, but it's something I think that from when I started in this job, I thought it was important that we knew who the quarterback was going to be all the time, and we've been consistent with that. It's played well for us. If you look across the league, there's very few times where you can go in and out of quarterbacks and that team ends up being successful. It's something that as you play that position, as the guys come into that huddle, they want to know who's leading them. And it's our job as coaches always to put everybody in the right position. But it just takes some of the anxiety out of the way when they know who their quarterback is going to be and who the trigger point is all the time. And so we've been fortunate with that. With John the first year, Carson, and now Andy to continue up and follow through. So I think it's a consistent message. It's one that I think everybody they know how we play and how we do, and it's worked well for us.
Andy, certainly with your position, there comes a certain expectation of pressure playing the spot in the NFL that you play. How do you not let this add even more pressure to what you do on the field?
I don't think it's really any added pressure because I expect this team to play better. I expect myself to be better, and so we have high expectations for what we're trying to do this year, and so regardless of the contract or not, I would have expected to go into the season with the same mentality, same attitude, and we want to be really successful, and we want to win a lot of games, and so regardless of the contract getting done, I don't think that mindset or mentality is changing at all.
I love for Mike Brown, the comment about we're betting big on Andy Dalton because we believe in Andy Dalton. It really says all you need to know about the way the team feels about it.
Because that's how this was
kind
of couched, wasn't it? Are they going to go all in with him, or are they not going to go all in with him? I mean, that's how this has kind of been. Mm-hmm. Is this is either we are gonna push our chips to the table with this guy, or we're gonna just kind of lay off and go, you got to have to do something. No, they've quickly gone all in. I want to know though, those listeners, were they able to tell the voices? You think? We're able to discern who was who.
Yeah, it's so hard to tell who's who. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just would like to say that different. We are going all in with Andy right now. Yes. And then the other voice you can tell is Andy's.
Is Andy's, yeah. I mean, you couldn't have three more different people there. But, yeah, I thought Andy Dalton talking about leadership and a team putting themselves behind you. Financially, all right, in the NFL these days, there's a lot of things that are said, and we are lied to on a daily basis. I think we get used to that. That's fine. Yep, you're going to lie to us. That's just we're okay with that. And players know that, and players can spot all that you just never really quite know what you can believe anymore. But you know what you can believe is money.
Mm-hmm.
And the money tells the story. And it tells the story in this case. They were willing to put it behind Dalton. I can think all the way back to the league meetings in Orlando, Marvin Lewis talking about how Dalton is their guy. And everyone that came to the table and sat with us at that breakfast that morning when he went on and on about how Dalton was his guy, all kind of left saying, yeah, we'll see about that. We'll see what really happens with this. And everybody's saying it. Hugh Jackson saying that. Mike Brown at the luncheon talking about that. Believing that Dalton is their guy. And you always said, yeah, but afterwards, because unless they got a deal done, then it was just lip service.
It was lip service, absolutely.
And this gives that credibility walks in that locker room, okay? because lip service, those guys don't want to hear lip service. They've been fed lip service their whole NFL career by every GM or anybody they've ever talked to, any coach. They know the guys they actually put the money behind is really where it's at. And I think this could help Andy Dalton in a big way.
Well, it may have already – it seemed like that he had a feeling this was really, really close to getting. And we did too to some degree, but he's had such a good camp and he seems real relaxed and he seems – the question kind of constantly gets brought up about, you know, is Andy the leader? And you hear people – sometimes you hear players talk about, yeah, we're behind Andy. I thought Andrew, we'll hear from him a little bit, had some good quotes and about that whole leadership thing. And I thought Andy did too. We heard that, you know, my rookie year, it's one thing to come in and say, yeah, I'm the quarterback, that makes me the leader. And he said, yeah, and I'm a 23-year-old guy in a huddle with 34-year-old guys. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be a leader. He's now been around this enough. He's done enough in the regular season that now he is, and especially now that the team has basically said he's the leader. Well, now you're going to follow him. You're going to follow him off the cliff, or you're going to follow him to the heights. I mean, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? So in that regard, I want to bring in Andrew Whitworth and Leon Hall, who we talked to in the locker room today. And, I mean, these guys are so insightful on this thing. And you can't find two guys that have a better pulse of the locker room than Whit and Leon. And I thought they were really interesting talking about the leadership and how – this contract can affect you mentally and affect those around you. So anyway, here's Andrew Whitworth and Leon Hall talking about how this can affect a guy and those in the locker room around him.
You're mentioning about quarterbacks being the leaders of the team. How have you kind of seen him maybe progress in that regard? Has he progressed in that regard since
last
year?
I mean, I think he's doing little things that, you know, the truth is a lot of times great quarterbacks, it's the little things, you know, and some people look for a play on a certain down or, you know, a certain big moment in the game. But the real truth is, I mean, the guys that you'd call great leaders, it's the real little things that people just don't, you know, take notice of, that only guys in the locker room would know that he's doing. And, you know, it's little things of encouraging guys here or there, taking a moment with a guy, you know, a young offensive lineman to say, you know, encourage him, or, you know, a different guy in the locker room that he does that. And then, you know, little other things of just kind of making himself available to guys that need help and those kind of things. I mean, that's what you really see the great ones do and makes them special.
He's starting to do that more, I mean, I guess because he came in with such a whirlwind that he had to worry about himself for a long time. Do you think now it's kind of
I mean, he's starting to do it. I mean, also, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, a lot of things are media driven, but I mean, at the end of the day, the guy's in his fourth season in the NFL. He's not a 10-year veteran. So, I mean, he doesn't really have the place to tell a whole lot of guys what to do or how to expect this and that because he hadn't experienced it yet either. And as he's getting more experience because of his character and the kind of guys he is, he's taken that role and he's taken leadership. You can't lead from never having experienced or having any clue what you're leading people through. So, you know, I mean, what he's done has been able to show a consistency and who he is and how he is, no matter what the scrutiny is over the last couple of years. And now that he's got some experience behind him, he can help other guys through things he's been through. And so that's what a leader does, and that's all he can do. And so he continues to do that year in and year out. And you know, the bottom line is if we all play well and he plays well, we'll go where we need to go.
Where were you when you found out?
Well, I've kind of known. I mean, you know, being as close to him as I am, I've kind of known along the process where we are and what we're doing. And you know, sometimes I serve a lot of different positions on this team, so I've been in all of it. Sometimes I joke with them, I need to start charging commission. Some of these young guys need to start paying me commission. All the contracts I reviewed and talked to them about. So, but no, really, you know, he's been excited, and I think he's one of those guys that this only gives him inspiration to be even better, and because he's kind of one of those that, you know, always, you know, has that attitude of he hasn't done good enough in anything he does. And so I think this gives him an opportunity to have something to go reach more for and prove why they give it to him and why they think that about him. And so I'm happy for him and happy for him and his family.
How was he?
When you got your deal, how did things change? Did you feel pressure to show that you deserved that? And was that different than the pressure you had before that?
I think that there is a little pressure as far as, you know, you get this deal and people see the numbers that now obviously they want to you know, you might have been playing great before, but you have to do something more. You know, there's always that idea in your mind when it happens. But, you know, I started to think like that at the beginning, but at the same time, you have to realize that, you know, they paid you, they're paying this money because obviously what you've done and what they want you to do. But, you know, obviously if you didn't play well and do your job, essentially, you wouldn't have got that deal in the first place. So you kind of have to take a step back and realize that you got to keep working. It doesn't mean you can, you know, go easy on yourself, start coming in late and just doing whatever you want. You just have to keep doing what you've been doing, you know, keep playing well and keep making plays.
You know, I thought, you know, you have wit talking about being able to play loose and be who you are because you don't have to worry about what anybody else is thinking anymore, and having that freedom, you know, just feeling you have a freedom, I think can be a big help for a guy who maybe has played tight in big situations. And that's, I mean, the knock is on playoffs and primetime games and that type of stuff, really struggling. Well, maybe part of that is being a little too tight. Maybe this helps loosen him up and really feel free to kind of go out there and be himself. You know, I don't know. This could all be garbage, and he could go out there and turn into Matt Schaub this year and throw six pick sixes, and we'll be talking about the out on the contract. But I think this could go a long way to helping him in that regard.
Again, we're basing all whatever negativity you have about Andy Dalton is based on three games. I mean, that really and truly is it. And again, he's had a couple of bad regular season games, but overall, you can't fault the body of work in 48 regular season games. Primarily, you're basing all the not you personally, the collective you, the audience you, is basing it off of three games, and so. Maybe that does do it. He still has to do it at the end of the day. I just think that you can tell how much everybody believes. The defensive guys believe it. The offensive guys believe it. This is our guy. This is the guy that we're going to get behind. And, you know, he may go through a rough patch, but he's still our guy. And we're still going to rally around that. And you know, hopefully for Andy's sake, he understands to take that and play very relaxed and loose. I think he's done that so far in camp. But I know it's just camp. And you can't tell everything. But I think he's been extremely sharp in just about everything he's done so far.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. He's definitely been sharp. He's looked good. But at the end of the day, to quote one of our good friends,
yes,
at the end of the day, you know, it's he could have the greatest regular season
in his
career.
And it'll still come down
to what happened in January. And because that's where it's at. I think he could go a long way by playing really well. In those primetime games, particularly New England, Denver, I think he could make a lot of hay there.
It's funny you say that because you even go back to last year, the Pittsburgh game, mm-hmm, where they threw 5,000 passes in the first half, I believe, and ran the ball two times. But in that game, it was almost as if, this guy's not going to take us anywhere. And he obviously did. It took you back to the playoffs. But you're right. Some of those games still magnify a lot of times, too, perception nationally and sometimes locally even.
Yeah. I mean, it needed to be better against Pittsburgh and Baltimore and those types of things. I mean, that's still all out there, and so the regular season can go a long way towards trying to dispel some of that for him. But you know,
but Fred right now sitting in Delhi listening to us, Fred cares about what happens when he's got that cold Hootie Delight sitting next to him. And by golly, he's going to be rooting for Andy to win a playoff game. And if he doesn't, don't like me no Andy Dalton. That's just the way it's going to be. He's got to prove it.
Yeah, and I keep going back to the same thing. I just think anybody that is a Dalton hater has some ammunition, but has no understanding of how difficult it is to be a quarterback and get a team in the playoffs, and to do it 3 years in a row, your first 3 years in the league, and do it your first year coming to a team that just had a quarterback say, "I'd rather retire than play here," and a lockout year where you couldn't even practice with your teammates.
And Leon addressed some of that stuff too. I mean, he even said that proved to us how great he was as he came in that right away that rookie year and led us to the playoffs in spite of the adversity that team was facing.
Yeah, I mean it goes a long way. And yes, just making it to the playoffs is not good enough. But how do you fix that? By getting rid of Andy Dalton and sending in Jason Campbell or A.J. McCarron or whoever it may be, or drafting a rookie that's going to be a 50-50 shot, you know? You don't know.
But you do know how sports works. I mean, it is always the unknown.
Yeah.
Why do you think fans of college teams so love recruiting? It's because the next great thing you haven't seen, you just have heard about, and by gosh, he's got to be better than what you got, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's always the case, and you just have to accept that fact.
Yeah, and you know, and the same facts will exist around Marvin Lewis, around Andy Dalton, heck, around Mike Brown, or anybody, until they win a playoff game.
And it's fair. And it
and
is,
it's all
it is
fair.
It is all fair.
It will continue to hang
but
over.
But don't let it put the blight on that Andy Dalton, it's either he sucks or he's really good. There is a gray area in there for him. He's been really good, and sadly in the playoffs he sucked.
Yeah, he did suck in the playoffs, though. Very badly. For three series, it was maybe the worst three series in a row that a quarterback could possibly have.
Oh, you didn't get a chance to witness the 1970 playoff game, the first one they ever played against the Colts. As a young seven-year-old, I watched that game and witnessed the Bengals have, I believe, six first downs.
Six first downs.
Behind Virgil Carter, and Sam Weich might have even played that game, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're really going old school.
I'm going old school.
I bet Fred wasn't expecting to hear some
Fred,
nuggets
remember,
from
Fred,
the 19-
Fred, you remember that game, don't you?
Fred was probably there. Fred was probably underage drinking for that game, I'd imagine.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
A few cold ones back.
Back then in Ohio was actually you could
near
drink
beer,
age,
maybe.
Drink at age 18. So probably Fred was doing that.
Drink that 3-2. Fred's got that 3-2 beer
exactly.
For sure. So let's kind of move it along a little bit and talk about, you know, because we can't. It's sort of like the way too early top 25 polls that come out the day after the college football national championship. Who's next? You know, so what does this mean now? I mean, Dalton is in the books, and all you heard the whole time, and this is the case, when you have a $96 million nugget, you've got to figure out how it fits. You can't go putting other nuggets in before you put that one in. You got to get the main cog in, and everything surrounds around that. So that domino has been pushed over. So who is next? And I think to me, Vontaze Burfict is still going to happen. Now, of course, the latest thing that everyone points out was, oh, there was reports that they're at an impasse and they're not talking anymore. Fair enough. I'm sure they are at an impasse because no deal has been done. And there is – that's one of those things that maybe that's the one that probably falls in that first week in September deadline. And they'll start talking again at some point soon and try to find a creative way to get that. It just makes too much sense for both sides. You cannot imagine Vontaze Burfict deciding, you know what, I'll go ahead and just make $570,000 this year when he could very easily make – a contract that ends up in the $6 to $8 million range. That's a big difference in money.
Yeah, there's no question about it. The part though is it money that's going to be well spent at the end of the day? Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely, because you get him at a bargain. That's a bargain price for a guy like that.
Well, and he is the face of this defense, correct?
Yeah.
I mean that's what it comes down to. I know that sounds cliche-ish. You have to see him in practice every day to believe the intensity level. I mean, he hits guys in non-contact drills. Did one today. I mean, for goodness sakes, it was a goal line drill. They throw a pass to one of the free agent guys. I can't remember which one it was, Colin Lockett maybe, or somebody along those lines, Jasper Collins possibly. And he caught the ball at the 1 yard line, and Vontaze hit him. And you're supposed to hit and let go. Guys, and we make fun of Rex Burkhead because he likes to run all the way to the end zone from 90 yards out. Well, this was a yard out. And so the kid's thinking, I'm going to finish the drill by getting in the end zone. And Burfict grabs him, throws him back. Grabs him, throws him back. Grabs him, basically says, you're not getting in there. And Marvin actually yelled at him to knock it off. But that's the intensity level that you need. And it's a playmaker's position.
Yeah.
And really, we haven't seen enough of Emmanuel Lemieux to know if he's a playmaker. Ray Malaluga is not a playmaker. Vinny Ray is not in a playmaker role if he's going to be the fourth linebacker. Vontaze Burfict's a playmaker.
Yeah, no, he is a playmaker. And really... It just, like I said, there's just too many things that make too much sense with Vontaze Burfict and on the Bengals side, because the same way we talked about financially backing this guy as the leader of your team is the same thing that they want to do. They want to solidify Vontaze Burfict as the leader of this defense.
And let's face it, they got this Dalton contract done with the knowledge of Burfict is net. I mean, they structured it to where they're going to find a way to structure Burfict's hopefully, to make it work for both sides as well. I don't know what incentives and escalators you can put in there for a guy like that, You know, maybe you tie his to winning in the playoffs too. Maybe it comes down to that. That becomes a very team-based circumstance.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't look. They wanted to get Andy done. There's no question about that. But I think they got Andy done with the knowledge of, all right, how is this going to help us to structure this contract, and then eventually next year possibly AJ Green's contract as well.
Yeah, that's the whole point of telling everyone to worry more about the structure than the money, is because the structure is what matters when you talk about signing other guys. And so the other interesting thing, I talked with Joel Corey, who's a great source. He writes for CBS. He writes for a couple different places. But he's a former agent, and he's really a guru when it comes to salary caps and contracts. And he had a great point to me about what this means for AJ Green, and he's told me all along with this, way back when I was writing Dalton stuff back in March, about, hey, this is where he ends up is really going to be the biggest thing that you watch in regards to where Green's contract ends up. Now, his point was the base salary for Dalton's contract here is where the ceiling is for AJ Green's, because no team is going to pay a receiver more than their franchise quarterback. Even Megatron makes less than Matt Stafford in Detroit, and no one's better than him. And he makes crazy money for receivers. And so if AJ Green is going in there saying, I want to be paid like the best receiver in football, which would mean topping out Calvin Johnson's 16.2 per year, Larry Fitzgerald's 16.2 per year, that would not be possible by that. I mean, if you go by that rule, right, if that's the ceiling, then, you know, he's not going to get it. I don't think he's going to get that anyway. I just don't see it. I don't see the Bengals paying it. He could get a couple $1 million a year less than that or whatever, but you know, I think it does set an interesting spot for him.
Well, and let's face it, his agent just negotiated the Patrick Peterson deal as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, he got him a good chunk of money for a cornerback. He put him in a different stratosphere. That makes it, when you see that, it makes you have a little bit of pause to say, yeah, that's you know, not a stratosphere that maybe A.J. Green can get into. He goes back to, is AJ comfortable enough to take a little bit less to stay here, to be on a possible winning team, to realize what's enough money? That contract to me, if I was a Bengals fan, would worry me more than Vontaze Burfict. I think Burfict gets done.
Yeah.
AJ, I think you're gonna have to have some concessions to get AJ done.
Yeah, and certainly I think it's probably on the plate for next year. You never know. I mean, they could figure out a way that maybe they said, well, forget it. If Perfect's giving us trouble, we have all the hand there, because I mean
we've seen them do that before too, where it's one player. If that player decides not to play ball, we'll go to the next player and sign him instead, and the first guy's out.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing, because of everything I mentioned earlier, you know, the Bengals have, you go to an old Seinfeld reference, they've got hand.
Yeah.
I mean, the restricted, the top tender level for next year that they could give to Vontaze Burfict is $3.1 million. That's far less than what he would be making. So you'd be taking,
another year of wasting it in
your prime, and when your value's never been higher. You're saying then if he goes by that pattern, he would make $570,000 this year. And he would make $3.1 million next year, because they'd place the top level tender on him as a restricted free agent. So you're now looking at $3.7 million. He would make more than that. He would make probably double, triple that in the first 3 days.
Just to sign.
Just to sign.
Yeah, no, just to sign, right.
Just to sign, and you're talking about bringing injury into risk. It makes no sense for him to wait. It just makes no sense. And I'm sure the Bengals are playing that leverage to every bit. But so if you're talking about passing it on, the Bengals will say, oh, okay. I mean, we're the ones that have the great deal here. We're trying to help you. You need to help us, because the Bengals are the ones that say, well, okay, we'll just pay you $3.7 million for the next 2 years and call it a day.
And I know players don't think this way, but you brought up the whole thing. You tell a guy, look, you're going to make $4 million over the next 2 years and then risk, you know, what's going to happen after that, or you can sign for $10, $12 million guaranteed money tomorrow. Period, end of story. And you know, we'll call it a day, and then we'll put the different escalators in it and do the different base salary structure for him. if I'm him, that's a deal I'd have to really look long and hard at taking if that's what's put on the table for him.
And they could franchise tag him after the restricted. Right, right. So this goes on.
You're talking 6 years into the league at that stage.
If you're Vontaze Burfict, to me it just makes no sense. Because if you do one now, you probably have a second bite at the apple in 4 or 5 years, depending on how many years you sign for. And that's a double big contract. That's a great.
And by then you're winding the Dalton contract down a little bit to where you've decided, all right, it's time to go in a different direction. Yeah. Or if he's still the guy, you've already got that on the books.
And there will be so much more money in the league at that point. Well, yeah,
and that's the other thing we don't know is how much more money keeps going up and up and up.
And the TV deals will all start to kick in then. And so I think you'll see everyone's salary cap go higher, which means a lot more money for everybody. That's a time when you want to make sure that you are a free agent. So I guess kind of wrapping that up, that's probably a long, very convoluted, lots of numbers way of saying Burfict makes sense. That should get done. Green, I still think gets done next year, but I don't think he makes Calvin Johnson or Larry Fitzgerald money. I don't think the Bengals are interested in that, and I don't think they could pull that off. We'd be remiss because we can stop watching practice for a little while. We'd be remiss if we didn't start talking a little bit about the actual game of football that's going to be played on Thursday this week. Bengals at Chiefs. Game plan, yes. How to cover? Do we know the spread?
I did see it. The Bengals are actually a 2.5-point underdog as we sit here right now.
I was joking with one of my friends. I said, this is the time of year where the gamblers and the degenerates separate themselves.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You move from being just a gambler to being a degenerate if you bet on preseason football.
I believe last night that the Hall of Fame game on Sunday night was a 3-point line, and it kind of hovered around that way the whole night. And I guarantee you somebody was sitting there at the end hoping that the Bills got in to at least get them a push, and they did not.
Yeah, what you're doing then is you are essentially sitting there having to root for Tool time.
Yes.
You know, when Tool comes in, and now
Thad Lewis time by then.
Oh, it was Thad Lewis. I'm actually pro Thad. I like Thad Lewis. But, you know,
best part for me is I fell asleep with 2.5 minutes to go and didn't really care what the outcome was.
No. I mean, if you want to bet on Thursday's game, you are betting on Matt Scott.
And we've seen a lot of Matt Scott.
I mean, you might want to take the other side of that bet. Sorry, Matt, but you haven't been very good.
Good luck to you.
Go on about your life's work sooner rather than later, probably. So I guess let's just start this. What are you looking at, and what are your expectations for the game on Thursday?
I want to see, honestly, if Russell Bodine can snap the ball with a blitz in his face.
Yeah.
It's not
– You could have stopped that. It snapped the ball.
Well, that's a good call. It's not – completely egregious because it doesn't happen every third snap, every fourth snap, but it happens. It didn't happen today in practice.
It's happened three times in the last week.
Last 4 or 5 practices. Yeah. It did not happen today, so that's a good sign. They also didn't do a lot of live 11. They blitzed some because actually Darqueze Dennard got a sack on a blitz and Reggie Nelson got a sack on a blitz when they touched the quarterback. But and that was not against Russell Bodine, actually, his group in there, so he wasn't having to snap. That's one part of it. I don't think we'll see Andrew Whitworth play, even though he came to practice today. I'd be stunned if he even dressed. I think you'll see Marshall Newhouse play that tackle spot. Andre Smith did not practice today either, still with the concussion protocol, so you'll still see Wills Vitek.
Wills Vitek in the house.
At that spot. And let's face it, Bengals fans are going to take a quick measurement of Andy Dalton. If he's 1-for-6 in whatever 2 series he plays.
Worst contract ever.
No question. If he's 6-for-6, you're going to say, see, genius. He's sharp. Yeah. So, I mean, you know it's going to happen. They're going to take quick inventory of how sharp Andy is, what Hugh Jackson's offense is all about. Will we see, you know, Paul Gunther blitz more? This is more evaluating players than worrying about schemes at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
Bodine's the most interesting guy to me, and Jeremy Hill, too, because we've seen him look really good in some drill stuff where really it's just touching. There's no tackling. I want to see him run through a tackle. I mean, I want to see him have that ability to run downhill and run through a tackle on first contact.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Jeremy Hill is the most intriguing. You want to see what he has to offer because you just can't judge from practices on running backs, even when they go plausibly live or whatever the heck we saw.
Right, right.
So, you know, it just doesn't matter. So I'm really interested in him. I'm interested in the back end of the roster. Like I know most people will probably turn it off or already be asleep probably by midway through the second half. But I think it gets really interesting there when you have a lot of these guys in the camp battles that really show up then.
Well, we've all picked guys that we kind of like in camp. Yes. I mean, Ryan Hewitt's become my guy on offense. And
James Wright is my media darling.
And he's been really good. He's an interesting guy to watch, too. I mean, if I'm a fan, that those deep wide receiver battles to see Kobe Hamilton, who's had really good flashes and has had some drops. Issues. James Wright has been extremely good catching the football so far.
He's had some drops lately, too.
Yeah,
though.
One was a little iffy. It was a little wind-aided drop on Saturday. I'm going to give him a little pass on that
Give
one.
Him a pass because of the wind?
Yeah.
It did kick up a little bit.
At the very last second, it kicked up for him. But this is also, he's catching balls knowing he's not going to get really hard contact either, Paul. So, you know, what's going to happen if he's running something down the seam and the corner, he thinks he's got the corner beat, and here comes a safety huffing and puffing and about ready to knock his block off. How will he handle some circumstance like that? So those to me, I'm with you. Some of those last roster spots are fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I'm just happy that we can talk about games. I think back to a couple years ago when in the first quarter of the first preseason game, about three or four major players all went down hurt.
And there's always
Carlos
that.
Dunlap missed the whole preseason. Your Ray Maluga got hurt in that game. And it all happened back to back to back. And you're thinking, well, this could not have gone worse. At the end of the day, as Hugh Jackson would say, you want to come out healthy. And I think that's probably the thing that they are – should be most focused on, is they just want to come out without any major injuries.
And I'll be honest, I mean, you don't, back in the day, you would have a lot of live tackling stuff in practice. You don't have that very much anymore. And that is a fear that for the first time of some live tackling that goes on, some real live take you to the ground contact that goes on, that something like that happens. And as a fan, I'm sure as a coaching staff, that's the one thing you hold your breath on.
Yeah, exactly. So you've now had that was your official scribe session preseason primer here, so you're now prepared for the big tilt on Thursday. I'm sure everyone will be glued to their TV.
I'm not predicting a score. Please don't make me.
No, we're not doing score predictions for preseason games. I do predict. There's going to be a couple of injuries that we're going to have to track. Mm-hmm. It just seems like, especially the first game, you always get a lot of guys that are pushing themselves, not used to it, and taking a few hits. It'll be interesting to see who that ends up being. But so I guess we're out of here. I guess we're going to be going through our possible music choices to take us out. I mean,
it's got to be something money themed, doesn't it?
I do. You know what? This song was on in the locker room.
Good call.
When we went in today, it was Kanye West. Wait till I get my money, right? And so I feel like
this doesn't seem like it's up Andy Dalton's tree in the music listening genre.
No.
And I don't think anybody really had the sense of humor to do that on their own. I think it was just great coincidence. Or was it a funny coincidence?
It was a funny coincidence. They can't tell him anything now because he's got his money. So we'll go ahead. We'll do Kanye. We could do that. We go old school last week, you know.
That's a couple weeks gone
old school. We'll go a little
Stones,
new school.
Kung Fu Fighting, and now.
And now Kanye West. So, you know, we're like the Renaissance podcast. I mean, we really do cover it all. We do it all.
When do we put some country on?
I'm gonna try to push that back as far as I can. Probably when we go south during our southern trip in November.
We've got a southern swing coming.
We do have a whole swing. We hit the southern swing.
We're like the PGA Tour. We got the southern swing coming.
We do. When we head to Houston, we'll get you some country music. When we're about ready to throw in our boots and our spurs and go eat like 40-ounce steaks.
I'll go with you on the 40-ounce steaks. Whatever you do on your free time is yours, my friend.
I own no chaps, I'm proud to say. But,
sorry,
so thanks to Kanye for taking us out. And, of course, always thanks to JustFauto.com, the US Fauto Group, for helping us sponsoring this podcast. And so we will be coming back to you next week. We'll have plenty of really insightful reaction from the trip to Kansas City and on everything that's going on with Bengals. Maybe somebody else will get paid next week. Back in my day. All right, we'll talk to you later.
Well, homie, this is my day. Class started 2 hours ago. Oh, am I late? No, I already graduated. And you can live through anything if magic made it. They say I talk with so much emphasis. Ooh, they so sensitive. Don't ever fix your lips like collagen to say something where you gon' end up apologizing. Let me know if it's a problem then. Aight, man, hollering in. Till I get my money right. La, 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 la. Then you can't tell. can't tell me nothing. Let the champagne splash, let that man get cash, let that man get past. He don't even stop to get gas. If he could move through the rumors, he could drive off of fumes, cuz I move in a room full of no's. I stay faithful in a room full of. Must be the pharaohs, he in tune with his soul. So when he buried in a tomb full of gold, treasure, what's your pleasure?